Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
I'm Ashley McKinless, along with my colleague Tim Reedy, and we're going to switch gears now and talk with Rona Tarrant. She's a journalist with Ireland's national broadcaster, RTE, and America Media's Dublin correspondent. Thanks for being with us, Rona.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. So we're almost a week out from the momentous Brexit vote, but I'm wondering if you could take us back to when you first heard the news of the vote to leave and what your reaction was and what your friends and neighbours were feeling at that point.
Well, I suppose it all started in Ireland about maybe 4 or 5 months ago. The chatter started in the media about Brexit. But I'll tell you, in the lead up, there was loads of talk about what would happen with Brexit, particularly for Ireland. The big issues were the border and our trade with the UK and our common travel area. So those were three main things. This was discussed on the media here for months and obviously heated up in the last few months. But I'll tell you, last Thursday, when we were all finishing up here at the National Broadcaster, we were sort of planning on Friday morning. So we thought Brexit, you know, might take up half the day. They were obviously going to stay. It was a big theatrical song and dance. But in the end, it was all going to come back around. The status quo was going to remain. It was Thursday evening, I was going to bed, and it looked like the Remain campaign was edging it. The polls had swung around. Friday morning, everyone woke up. It was called, I think, by the BBC around 3:45 in the morning, and I don't think any of us got any sleep. It was just so shocking. I don't think anyone could truly believe it. And I don't think it was until they actually voted to leave that everybody started thinking about all of the consequences. The common travel area, the UK, people in the UK not being able to travel and live and work in all these European countries. What were they going to do about their trade agreements? What were they going to do about all the people who were living there from other countries? So I suppose the main thing in the last week really has been shock. We had a few people in Ireland sort of predicting it, and our government was putting in a contingency plan for what would happen. But we all thought it wasn't actually going to happen, but it did.
So what is that contingency plan? It seems like it's something that they're exploring right now.
Well, I'll tell you, the UK government seemed to have less of a plan than the Irish government. The Irish government were planning this for months. They held an emergency meeting at 8 a.m. on Friday morning. Now, their main focus was trade. The UK is our biggest trading partner. We're obviously very close to them. We're obviously attached to them with Northern Ireland. And we're set to lose out on a serious amount of money because of this. Now, Enda Kenny's over in Brussels at the moment arguing for Ireland's unique position. I think that was a big part of it. They're also operating under what is Project Calm at the moment, which is basically trying to sort of calm people down here, calm down the businesses, because we obviously have an awful lot to lose, particularly money-wise, but also common travel area. There's 500,000 Irish residents living, or Irish people living in the UK, so there's all these questions about what they're going to do. You obviously have Northern Ireland as well with the border controls. So Enda Kenny's over in Brussels at the moment arguing for our unique position with the UK. He also made an interesting point as well when he said that, you know, he was trying to communicate to them the peace process and how delicate that is in Northern Ireland. Obviously we still have trouble there, and he said he saw that the European Union was more like an evolving peace process in itself. So he's over there in Brussels sort of saying to them, look, the closer the UK can be with Europe, the better it is for us, the better it is for everyone.
That's Prime Minister Enda Kenny. So what does it mean for Northern Ireland? I mean, this is a big question.
It's a big question, and I think the big area for them is on a few fronts. Obviously, the big one that we were talking about for months here is the border. Now, it's not clear whether the border is going to come in or whether the border is going to there's going to be a soft border. This all goes back, I suppose, to a few months ago when people were sort of talking about it, and the Leave campaign said, look, there's no way, we're not going to put in a border, we're not going to bring us back to the troubles in the 1970s, the free travel area can remain. But you also have to remember the big driving issue of the Brexit debate was immigration. That was one of the big things. If you talk to any Irish person in the UK, the big issue there was the threat of immigration, the huge inward migration that was sort of threatening a lot of people who sort of felt alienated from power, who felt they had no stake in society, who felt that people were taking the jobs from them. So if you are talking about controlling your borders, which was a main focus of the Leave campaign, a border is going to have to go in place. Now, what that would look like is another question. The other thing for Northern Ireland is this is going to have a massive impact on EU grants. Farming in Northern Ireland is obviously very, very important, but it's hugely subsidised by the EU. The other thing is, and you have to remember about peace, it's not a matter of just relationships and all that. It's a matter of building up areas and regenerating them and making people want to live there. And the thing is, the EU was massive in boosting Northern Ireland tourism. Now, Northern Ireland as well, they have a fantastic tourist board who go over to the US, to the likes of yourselves, and they say, look, come do business in Northern Ireland. We have access to the single market. We're attached to Ireland. We have access to the UK. And now that's in question too. So there's massive implications on all fronts from Northern Ireland. And you had the bishops of Northern Ireland coming out in advance of the vote, and they said, look, don't jeopardise these relationships. Don't divide parishes. You know, there was obviously no clear line that you had to vote on. There was no Christian line, as Vincent Nicholls said in the UK. But he did say himself as well, he was warning against more division. So it seems like the Catholic Church in the UK and in Ireland were hoping for a remain, but that wasn't to be.
You mentioned concerns about migration were prominent in the Leave campaign. Are there similar concerns about unchecked immigration in Ireland?
To be honest with you, not really. You know, there was maybe a few years ago. Now, we did change our immigration rules so that we did change our rules on immigration probably back, I think it was in the 1990s. So we don't have a massive amount of people coming in here. And also you have to remember that Ireland suffered a massive recession. So a lot of people who came to Ireland would have left. Now, we do have a great, we have a growing and more diverse population, but it wouldn't really be a massive concern, especially in Northern Ireland. I don't think immigration was too much of a concern. That was more in the UK. I think what it was in Northern Ireland is there's a very complex debate around identity and who felt like European, who felt like a British citizen, who felt like Irish, who felt like they weren't European. So it was sort of more complex than that. Now, you have the Secretary of State, Theresa Villiers, in Northern Ireland. She was a Brexiteer. She was voting for Leave. And what's really interesting with her as well is she's taking a completely different position to Nicola Sturgeon from Scotland. Now, Scotland and Northern Ireland were two countries that voted to remain in Europe. Northern Ireland voted by 55%. Now, Nicola Sturgeon is arguing that Brussels, she's trying to develop basically some way for Scotland to stay in the EU. Now, Theresa Villiers, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, is saying, no, there can be no special status for the UK, for Northern Ireland in Europe. We have to leave. We're going with the UK. So that's an interesting point about it as well. Another interesting point about it as well is that Enda Kenny was advocating on behalf of Nicola Sturgeon and Scotland last night in Brussels, which is another interesting part of it, because he was saying, look, they want to remain. They want a special status. Is there anything you can do for them? So I suppose there's lots of sort of things going on there. It'll remain to be seen if the UK goes as a whole or if Scotland and Northern Ireland work something else out.
Now, you mentioned earlier the peace process in Northern Ireland, which is still, you know, obviously there's agreement in place and it's been holding, but it's still a little bit fragile. What was the reaction of the people involved in that process to this? Did, you know, you wrote for us, for example, that there was some suggestion that perhaps this would lead to a united Ireland.
Yeah, so that was Martin McGuinness. He didn't miss a trick. He took the opportunity there on Friday morning to call for a border poll with Ireland, for a united Ireland. Now, anyone on both sides of the border knows that this was just political opportunism and it wasn't ever a real possibility. You have to remember the peace process in Northern Ireland is so delicate. I mean, there's still sectarian attacks. There was a police officer killed earlier this year in Northern Ireland. It's still going on. It's still quite delicate. If you cross over the border, you'll see a very Catholic areas, very Protestant areas. The peace walls are still there. Actually, in fact, there's 40% more peace walls there than there was at the height of the Troubles. So it's still an ongoing process. Now, the thing is about a border poll, you can only call a border poll when you know that there is going to be support for a united Ireland on both sides. And RTE, where I work, did a poll recently. 66% of people in the Republic wanted a united Ireland in their lifetime, but just over a third wanted it in the short to medium term. This was actually even smaller in Northern Ireland. Only 30% wanted to see a united Ireland in their lifetime. It's a very, very complex question, and nobody wants to prod that at the moment. Also, Bruce Morrison, a former congressman in the US, he was quite involved in the peace process as well. He said it was absolutely absolutely horrendous, the idea of a border coming back, sort of that physical manifestation of all of that oppression, all of that fear, all of that really terrible time. Because you have to remember as well, that border only went up at the height of the Troubles in the 1970s. The free common travel area between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland has been in place since the 1920s. It actually predates the EU. And that's one of Enda Kenny, the Taoiseach's main points in Europe. He's like, look, we want to keep this travel area. We want to protect the peace process in Northern Ireland. We don't want those physical manifestations of the past. And we also don't want those problems with trade and going back to, you know, smuggling things over the border. Also, how would a border work? There's all these questions around it. I mean, it didn't particularly work at the height of the Troubles. Would you have passport checks from Belfast to Dublin, for example? What about at the Boharines, are you going to have a guard on all those? So there's so many other practical questions about it as well. The other thing I wanted to mention too is you have the people are saying, what about Norway and Sweden? You know, Norway's not in the EU, Sweden is, and they have one model. But Prime Minister of Norway, she was actually out in the last few days, and she was saying, look, our border works quite well. It's passport-free travel. Norway has that. You know, it's a single market. But she said something interesting. I have a feeling that's not what the referendum was about. It wasn't about, you know, being apart from Europe but still accepting the free movement of people. It all goes back to that immigration issue and the fact that the UK can't have access to the single market and still expect to write their own rules about immigration, particularly as the Europe is suffering the worst migrant crisis, I mean, ever.
Yeah, and it seemed in the UK that there was a generational divide on the question, with younger people more likely wanting to stay in and older voters voting to get out. Is there a similar divide in Ireland for how the European Union is viewed?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I suppose what was really shocking as well is, you know, I was talking about those 500,000 Irish people who are over there. A lot of those are very young Irish people. They work for multinationals. They're highly qualified. They're highly skilled. And they just could not believe it. What also is quite interesting is there's a massive spike in passports for Ireland. I mean, the Irish government has come out and told Britain, stop applying for Irish passports, at least for a few days. Because the Irish passport office is just being overwhelmed because people don't want to lose out on that, you know, free travel.
That's
and I think it's the younger generation in particular who can't understand how they wouldn't be able to travel and work in Europe and why the older generation would want to take that from them. So they're sort of saying, look, you can ease up on it for a while. Nothing's going to happen in the short or medium term. But, you know, a lot of people that I've spoken to, my sister's in the UK, my cousin's in the UK, they're saying, you know, they can't believe it. What's going to happen to their companies? Are they going to have to leave the UK? Are they going to have to leave Ireland? You have, you know, Irish people who are living there for a few years saying, you know, this sort of changes everything. We don't want to live in a sort of an inward-looking country. We want to be part of Europe. So I suppose it's sort of changing, and especially urban areas like London that are sort of open and cosmopolitan and seen as very sort of vibrant and all those things. You know, what does this mean for the likes of London when you see all these racist attacks going on? You see this racism sort of bubbling to the surface after the Brexit vote. It's bringing up some big tensions that I think a lot of young people just don't identify with, or they haven't ever recognized in their own lifetime.
Now, a lot of the people who voted for Brexit, it seems that one of the concerns they had was that, you know, they didn't feel connected to the larger European community. They felt like the EU was unrepresentative. As a younger person yourself who grew up for some part of your life as a student, as a professional in the European Union, how do you feel about that European community and versus how you feel as part of the Irish community?
Well, I suppose it's a very good question. I suppose I would have grown up not ever remembering when the EU wasn't there, and
right.
I think that's the same for a lot of people. Now, there is that disconnect, and I think that was a big problem with the likes of Brexit, because you had people on the Remain side, for example, David Cameron, who never was particularly a big fan of the EU, so his sort of thing, you know, was to come out and say, look, we don't particularly like them either, but we need them. And I think that's necessary in Ireland as well. There's sort of an ongoing joke in Ireland that, you know, when the government wants to get out of something, they blame Europe. Ah, yeah, that's the lads in Europe, you know. And there is definitely a tension in Ireland between the sort of bureaucrats in Brussels sort of being detached from Ireland. And you have to remember in Ireland as well, you know, we had that recession, we had the Troika come in, we had a lot of things imposed on us from Europe. And there is that resentment there On the other hand, Irish people are very global. They're very mobile. We like to move. We like to live in other countries. And Irish people, I suppose, the younger generation, particularly for me, I would see myself as a European. I would see myself as an Irish person. There is a joke in Ireland as well that we sort of missed out on all the great stuff of Europe. You know, we missed out on the Renaissance and all those things. We got to the party sort of late, all the stuff that the continent got to enjoy. But there is a sense in Ireland that we are members of the European Union. Irish people live and work all over Europe, all over the US, all over the world. So I suppose, and I think that's the same for the younger UK generation as well. There is that disconnect, but I think the European Union, and Pope Francis said this himself, he said, look, what's necessary now is to unite Europe and to sort of bring it together and to reassess itself. Like, Europe really needs to reassess itself, how the model works and how the bureaucracy works. And it's a golden moment for that, but it might be a little bit too late for Britain, unfortunately.
Now, Rona, we've just got a minute or two, so maybe you can just point us. You'll be covering this for us on the news brief. What story should we be looking for over the next few days?
Well, definitely the summit is going to be going on in Europe for the next few days. So I suppose there's a difference between the leaders in Europe over how quickly Britain should trigger Article 50. Now, Article 50 is the formal process of leaving the European Union. So that's going to be very, very interesting to watch over the next few days. It's going to be interesting to watch how Ireland wrangles this, how they argue for their special status, how the other countries sort of argue for it as well. But to be honest with you, nothing's really going to change in the next few days. And obviously, what I think is going to be the most interesting story of the next few days is the UK Labour Party. You've already had David Cameron resign for the Conservatives. And today he urged Jeremy Corbyn, who's the leader of the Labour Party, to resign as well. So it's been an interesting week over here. We've had an existential crisis, we've had market turmoil, and we possibly have the resignation of two prominent leaders in the UK. So plenty to be looking out for.
Well, you'll be reporting on that for us at America This Week and also on SiriusXM, the Catholic channel. We want to thank Rona Tarrant. We want to thank Dr. Timothy O'Malley. And that is all for this week. Thank you for being with us. This is Tim Reeve for Ashley McKinless. If you like what you've been hearing, you can join us at America. Our website is www.americamagazine.org. And you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And to subscribe to America, you can call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533. Again, I'm Tim Reedy, sitting in for Father Matt Malone. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.